Blog Talk Radio.
Curious about investing and financial planning? You're in the right place. I'm Doug Goldstein, and you're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show. Here we go.
You're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show with financial expert Douglas Goldstein. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, or specific financial advice. If you require such advice, contact a competent professional advisor. Before making any investment decisions based on what you heard during the show, please review the complete disclaimer located at www.goldsteinongeld.com. And now, here's your host, Money Maven Doug Goldstein.
Good Money Monday. I'm Doug Goldstein. Thanks so much for joining me. If you didn't join me for last week's show, I had two fantastic guests who talked about habits and habit formation. And I think it's so important to realize that so many of the decisions that we make are not really decisions. They're just the habits that we happen to do. So since that show, in fact, even before that show, I've been researching a little bit. And one of the names that came up, in fact, in my interview last week with James Clear, and if you missed that, be sure to go back and listen to that show. One of the names that he brought up was a fellow named BJ Foggs, who is a professor at Stanford University. And I've been following BJ, and in fact, I want to tell you a little bit about what I've been doing. So BJ has a whole philosophy, which he explained in a TED Talk that he did, as well as a lot of writing. He calls it tiny habits. What are tiny habits all about? If you want to create a new habit, what are you going to do? You're going to say, well, I've decided I'm going to run a mile every day, or I'm going to, you know, my goal is to become a millionaire, so I'm going to save a lot of money. Whatever you decide to do, the problem is that people sometimes bite off more than they can chew. And that is true with habit formation as well. And maybe this sounds familiar to you. Maybe you decided you were going to go on a diet and you were going to stop eating sweets or stop drinking soda, or you were going to stop smoking, or you were going to start smoking or do some habit, whether it's a good or bad habit. And habits are hard to get going, but once you're going with them, they basically dictate how your life looks. So what's the goal? The goal is to develop really good habits. And what BJ Fogg said is start with small habits, but not just small habits, start with tiny habits. So a tiny habit, well, let me give you an example of a few things that I've been experimenting with. One of them is that I decided that I wanted to get a little more physically fit by doing push-ups along with other exercises. So it would be nice to do 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 push-ups a day. But based on the philosophy that BJ said, I started doing 2 push-ups at a time. So I would turn on the water for the shower, I would do 2 push-ups, and then I would move on with my life. This was not a big deal. One of the things that BJ talks about, the model he usually encourages people, is to floss one tooth after they brush their teeth. So this may sound a little crazy, and the first time I heard it, I said, wait a second, this is a little bit crazy. Why would you floss only one tooth? The idea is that the goal is not to ultimately be a one-tooth flosser, but it's to get your habits started. So I started doing push-ups, and I did 2, and now I do 3 or 4. That's one model. Another tiny habit that I was working on is I read a huge amount. I'm constantly reading the news, and I read a lot of business reports, and I think it's important for me to stay up to date. But one of the things, therefore, that I feel I don't have time for is reading books. So I wanted to read more books. What's the habit? Yeah, I got to get started reading books. You have to make it a habit. So I started with every time I would have my morning cup of coffee, I'd sit down and I would read one sentence. So this sounds like a ridiculous thing to do. Who's going to read one sentence? And the fact is, if you start small, you can then build up. Then you build up to a paragraph and a page and a chapter. And ultimately, you end up being a much bigger reader. But you need to develop the habit to do these things. So let's talk in a minute about some financial tiny habits that we can all do. So think about them for the next few seconds or minute or so, and then we'll talk about that, and I'll give you a few ideas.
Nobel Prize winners. Nobel Prize winners. Best-selling authors. Best-selling authors. Selling authors. World famous money managers. Money managers. Money managers. They are all on the Goldstein on Geld Show. Geld Show.
Have you got any ideas for tiny habits related to your finances? Again, a tiny habit is a small, easy thing to do, not painful, and you want to anchor it to something else, and I'll explain that to you in a minute. So maybe you could say, I'll do a small habit today. I want to become a little more charitable. But you got to get yourself in the habit. So maybe every night when you empty your pockets out, I don't know what your bedroom looks like, but I have a shelf where I put all my stuff on. And as you pull out your coins from your pocket, put a cup there and say, this is my charity box. And either put all your coins in, or if you want to start even smaller, you could say, I'll put one coin in a day when I empty my pockets. Because everyone empties his pockets, and you could certainly, wouldn't be a big deal to do this tiny thing to do. Maybe in the morning when you sit down for your cup of coffee, you say, I want to become better at saving for retirement. Now, obviously, wouldn't it be great if we could all put $10,000 aside every month to retirement, but maybe that's a little bit too much of a goal. But $5 a day, a lot of people could do that. You could probably get the money from not buying an extra Starbucks today. And that, of course, is a whole philosophy. I had on the Goldstein on Geld show recently, David Bach. If you didn't hear that interview, not only was it fantastic, but you can hear it now on YouTube. All of our interviews, you know, we make into videos. So just go to YouTube and look up Goldstein on Geld and David Bach, and he talks about great ways of saving. But to get yourself going, maybe when you sit down in the morning with your cup of coffee, if that's what you do, pull a fiver out of your pocket and stick it in an envelope. Do that every day when you go to work. It'll become a habit. You sit down, you pull the fiver out, you stick it in the envelope, and you'll begin to realize, wait a second, the end of the month, now this is real money, right? If you work there 20 days, that's $100 that month. Now, again, I'm not saying this is the end goal, but this is the habit formation. And you have to anchor it to doing something. And listen, I got to bring on my guests, so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about anchoring at the end of this at the end, let's try and do it at the end of the first half of the show. But let me just introduce the upcoming guests. In just a minute, I'll be bringing on Josh Kaplan, who is the head of a company of tea called Tea of the People. Fascinating company. I think you'll really enjoy hearing what he has to say. And in the second half of the show, I'll be bringing on Boaz Kaiser, who is a professor of psychology at the University of Chicago. And he'll be talking to us about behavioral finance issues that I think are really important in terms of what language we speak in. So that'll be in part two of the Goldstein on Geld show.
When you feel like your money is flying out the window and your nest egg starts to fry, there's just one show with all you gotta know. Do you understand the reasons why? Goldstein on Geld. Like you've never seen before. Interviews, stock tips, and so much more.
Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have on the Goldstein on Geld show Josh Kaplan, who is the founder and chief activist officer of Tea of the People. Josh, it's a pretty funky sounding name for a company. Tell us what you're all about.
Yes, well, thank you for having me. So Tea of the People, as I like to refer to it, is a problem-solving company. We looked deep within the tea industry and found two glaring issues associated with quality and health. And we looked outside of the tea industry and look at all the things that are going on in the world right now and wanted to dedicate our resources to solving those problems.
That's a pretty major undertaking. So how'd you do it?
So basically, Tea of the People started long before I actually got into tea. The book, Banker to the Poor by Muhammad Yunus, was a life-changing book. And as a passionate entrepreneur, I realized that not only could I create value for myself, but I realized that business could be a tool for good. And one day, I was walking through a health food store, took a look at the teas on the shelf as an avid tea drinker, and started to really take a look at what it is that I was putting in my body. I did some research, and what I came to was a very interesting conclusion, is that tea today, from a quality standpoint, could be so much more than it is. The reason for that is that the global tea manufacturers are pushing down the quality because it's most cost effective. The second issue that we found is that the fruit teas, Doug, that you know you and I and so many people that we know drink, doesn't actually have real fruit in it.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me. But when you look at the packaging on, you know, your local tea, it just usually says contains tea leaves and some other name. I don't see a lot of chemicals in it like I see with, you know, processed foods.
Well, that's exactly it. You mentioned something very interesting. You take a look at the everyday tea box and see that it just says tea. So we'll take green tea, for example. Most of us know that green tea is extremely healthy for us, but there are over 200 different types of green tea. However, most people are not aware of the different types of green tea, which have different health benefits and have different processing procedures that are associated with making it. So what we do is we cut through all of the teas that are on the lower end of the spectrum, and we use only the most meticulous teas to produce and the most antioxidant-rich green teas in the world.
Okay, let's take a step back for a minute, because really, I really want to talk about the business side, but you're saying things that are making me very curious, because I do drink a fair amount of tea. It seems to me that, and obviously you're going to correct me because I'm wrong, but the tea that I drink, you know, I buy whatever, I drink a lot of green tea, and usually the ingredients say green tea, although I've never actually read them much. Don't they just pick the leaves, dry them, and stick them in a bag?
So everybody knows that tea is one of the more healthier beverages that you could have. And most of it, about 98% of it, derives from the same leaf. And the Camellia sinensis is where most of the tea derives from. However, it's the processing that makes all of the difference. If you process it by steaming it or by using a hot wok to fry the tea, whether it be keeping it out in the shade for a certain amount of time or bringing it into the sun or picking the leaves inside of the plant or outside of the plant, this all makes a difference on the type of tea that you're going to get, and that affects the nutritional value of it.
No kidding. So tell me something else. How come tea, in other words, I often feel, I believe that tea is a healthier drink than some of the other stuff that people drink, but when you get a cup of tea and it sits in the cup and you drink it for the day, by the end of the day, your cup is all stained. And I always wonder, is that stuff going into me and also staining my insides?
That is a very interesting question. I recently went to the dentist and he had a little discussion with me and he said, Josh, he goes, you're brushing twice a day, right? I said, absolutely. And I'm flossing. He caught me on the flossing. He goes, there's no way you're flossing. I said, okay, you got me. You got me.
All right.
He said, I could see that you are drinking a tremendous amount of tea because it's turning your teeth the color of tea. I said, oh, dear. Well,
nasty.
You know, I guess I drink a lot of green tea then. He goes, well, it's not turning green, but you have to make sure that you brush extra hard. So there are some effects from tea. That stuff is not necessarily bad for you, but like anything we drink, there is a color to it.
Ooh, skanky. All right, well, good. I'm glad you didn't just tell me that it's because I wasn't buying Tea of the People tea. We're talking with Josh Kaplan, who's the founder of a company called Tea of the People, which he's been describing to us some of the model of being a high-quality tea, and not only in what they choose, but how they process it. One of the things, Josh, that people can see from your company and from the website is that you're not just a company that's making high-quality tea, but rather you have a mission about sustainability. And in fact, on the website, you talk about that your products and the way you deal with waste and energy are all designed to be sustainable. So I'm going to ask you two questions. The first one is, what do you mean by all of that? And the second one is, maybe we can dive down and to try and determine, it's neat or very nice that you're a good guy and you want to help the world, but are you going to make money for your shareholders? And then I want to extrapolate from that, from your answer, to all of these kind of SRI sort of investments. So I know it's
sure.
We're in the next 5 minutes, but let's see what we can do.
I think those are two great questions. And right now, I think that there isn't enough debate whether or not sustainable business is actually a good model. I think from a marketing standpoint, a lot of people think it's fantastic. But I'd love to have more of a debate whether or not financially it makes the most sense. I believe it does. So let me get into your question. So philosophically, I started Tea of the People because I wanted to make an impact. So it's a very different way, starting point from where I wanted to begin. I wanted to begin from making a difference and making an impact in healthcare and poverty alleviation and climate change and education. So I started off with wanting to make a difference in those areas. And instead of starting a charity, I wanted to create a sustainable, self-reliant organization? And I said, well, a for-profit is the way to go then. I'm not having my hand out just asking for things. I'm creating value. And with those dollars, I'm going to be able to keep the business going and grow and then give the dollars back to the community. So it's a very different starting point from creating a traditional business and then giving back. It was starting with always giving back, and what's the best vehicle to do that?
How long ago did you start the company?
So Tea the People, the idea of it has existed for over a year. And like a little chemist, I've put together every single blend myself. They're all hand blended. They're all original. And they're very, very complex to create. The company has been in existence and doing business since the fall. So we're a relatively new company, and already we've seen a tremendous effect that we've seen in tea drinkers and how they feel. And already some of the profits that we've been able to give to these organizations, we give very smartly. We give to very tech-savvy organizations, and they've been able to have a tremendous impact so far.
So I understand. The money that you make, you give away, or you just reinvest, as opposed to reinvesting in your own company?
So what we do is that we give a portion of our profits, between 5 to 10% each month, to a different entrepreneur or a nonprofit organization. So this past month, we just gave a portion of our profits. What Medic Mobile does is that they supply health workers in developing nations with SMS phones, not smartphones, very basic cell phones, that allow individuals in the community to manage their health care through text messages. So you and I take for granted going to the hospital to go and get our medication, but someone in these underdeveloped nations has to trek 10 miles to get their medication to find out that it might not even be there. So they're able to communicate with the hospital. So we've given enough phones that over 1,000 people could manage their own health care across 5 different African countries. And it's phenomenal.
Okay, so in other words, you're choosing a certain place to donate, but I'm trying to figure out, if you came to me and said, Doug, we want to expand, and you know, you're an investment guy, can you give us $1 million so we can, I don't know, whatever you would need to, you know, plant more tea and more processing ability. And I would say to you, great, you know, how am I going to, I'm an investor, how will I come out well? And you'll say, well, we're going to help Medic Mobile, which sounds very nice. But I say, no, but I'm an investor. So tell me more about the profitability of this model.
So I think right now where we are in terms of sustainable business is that it's a foregone conclusion that it is an incredibly powerful tool from a marketing standpoint. And I don't think that entrepreneurs should shy away from that and say that, well, it seems as though that people want to be socially conscious because it makes good marketing. Well, it makes good marketing because it's a good thing to do. Good things are good marketing tools. So when you start from a place of authenticity and it ends up being a good marketing tool, well, that's better than trying to figure out, well, what's a good marketing tool, and then go for something that's sustainable. To answer your question, whether or not an investor like yourself or someone who has more of a traditional view, more of a conventional investment philosophy, I would say it's fantastic, because it's one of the most effective ways to market your business. So if you're going to dedicate a portion of your profits towards making this impact, that's less dollars that you would then be putting out for more traditional marketing campaigns. And I think that this more authentic way of marketing, which is doing good through your business, is just another way of switching up the balance sheet and showing where financial resources are being allocated towards.
I hear. Okay, I like that explanation, meaning you started with a goal to have an impact, which was your original goal, and it's not that you're cynical saying, I'm going to, you know, donate to the children because then I'll get more clients, but I see that obviously there is a big market for this concept that is definitely attractive to a lot of people. Josh, I'm glad we were really able to talk on the business side of this, and unfortunately, we're just about near the end of our time today. So tell me, how can people learn more about you and the work that you're doing?
So Tea of the People is exclusively sold online at www.teaofthepeople.com. We have 8 teas. Our 8 inaugural teas are online. You can see them in all their glory. They're delicious, they're healthy, and they make an impact. And that's how your viewers and your listeners could get a hold of it.
All right, so we will put a link to that at the show notes of today's Goldstein on Gelt show. Josh Kaplan, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
in the beginning of the show, I was talking to you about developing tiny habits, and I gave you some examples of things that I had done, doing a couple of push-ups a day, beginning to read more in books as opposed to just articles. These were things I wanted to build up. And then I gave you some examples of tiny financial improvements you could do, habits you could pick up. And the motto here, the paradigm, is to do tiny habits, little things that are not painful. So let me give you two more pieces of information you have to know. The first thing is, in order to develop a habit, you have to anchor it to something. You have to anchor it to something you're already doing. So I give the example of when you go to bed at night and you're emptying your pockets, which I assume is something you do every day, that's the anchor. And then you put a coin in your charity box, in your tzedakah box. Or when you sit down in the morning, literally you say, I sit down at my desk with my cup of coffee and then pull a $5 bill out of your wallet and stick it in an envelope for your retirement savings. Just by doing that, by developing that pattern and having an anchor, this will actually become a habit. The same thing you could do, by the way, also something totally not painful, is save your receipts. Every time you buy something, so it means you have to take out your credit card or your coins or your money, you get in the habit of say, every time I put my wallet away, I'm going to put the receipt into my pocket. So that'll, of course, force you to get the receipt and stick it in your pocket. It just becomes a habit after a while. And the second thing you have to do is you have to give yourself a pat on the back. When you execute the habit that you're developing, stop for a second and say, awesome, I did it, or I'm the man. Get up and do a little dance. Whatever it is that's going to alert you to the fact that you have now done the right thing. You've worked on building up a habit. So those of you who are cynical, obviously you're not going to be into this, but those of you who are a little open to it, go to the website of BJ Foggs, the fellow from whom I learned about this. He is a professor at Stanford University. Just go to tinyhabits.com, sign up. He's got a system. It's free, and you can just try to build yourself up doing this. And I would love to hear some responses for how it's going for you. Be in touch with me at goldsteinongelt.com. Just click on the Contact Us page. Okay, we're done with part one of the show. Make sure you come back at part two. I'll be bringing on some professors at the University of Chicago that are going to explain to us why speaking a second language can in fact make you a very, very bad decision maker.
You're listening to Money Maven Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Geld Show. Stay tuned for the second half of the show right after the break.